As promised, a few weeks ago, we're finally getting to the first principle of the faith. We're very fortunate because we've been working on the concept of emunah, the ideas of emunah, and strengthening our own belief systems, and that's in perfect preparation for Shavuot. So we're right in line with the theme of the season, and it's a wonderful opportunity that we've been doing that. And I want to continue encouraging people to think about emunah and develop it within themselves in ways that are very practical and basic, such as looking at your everyday experiences. Don't think that things happen by chance. Understand that things happen for a reason. Try to look for Hashem in your life and seeing the emunah that can be developed in your own personal life. That's a very important point. I want to reiterate that point. Okay, the first principle. So this translation of the first principle is by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. He has a booklet called Maimonides Principles, which is excellent. It's in the Aryeh Kaplan anthology. And I took the translation is straight from his book, so we're just going to read through the translation. The first principle involves belief in the existence of God. Okay, that's the first principle. There is a being, perfect in every possible way, who is the ultimate cause of all existence. All existence depends on him and derives from him. It is inconceivable that he does not exist. Okay. It is inconceivable that he does not exist. So, when the Rambam says that it's inconceivable that he does not exist, then that means that that's not the tenet of belief. Because if it's inconceivable that he doesn't exist, then that's not what the first principle is about. It's not about the fact that there is a God. Because it's inconceivable to think otherwise. So that's not a principle of the faith. It's not possible to conceive otherwise. So there's no thought otherwise. So that's not the principle. It's building up to the principle. Must be it's building up to the principle. If he did not exist, everything else would cease to exist and nothing would remain. Again, if he did not exist, everything else would cease to exist and nothing would remain. If, however, we could imagine that nothing else existed, if we could imagine that nothing else existed other than Hashem, he would not cease to exist. He would not be diminished in any way. So, in a mathematical theory, you know, A is a constant and B is contingent on A. B is the variable that's dependent on A. A will never change. Whether you take B away, you don't take B away, A is always going to remain. Hashem is A. He's the constant. And even if you take B away, he still continues to exist. Only God, this is another element of the principle of the faith, only God is totally self-sufficient, and therefore, unity and mastery belong to him alone. Again, only God is totally self-sufficient, and therefore unity and mastery belong to him alone. And since Hashem needs nothing other than himself, he, in a sense, satisfies his own needs, so to speak. Hashem doesn't have needs, but in our terms, Hashem satisfies his own needs, he's self-sufficient. He's self-maintained, so he's the only one that has true mastery. If you're dependent on someone else to provide you your needs, then you're not a master, you're dependent on others. You're not a master. And he also has unity, in the sense that there's no other force that he needs to rely upon. He doesn't need to rely on anything else. It's not like there's another force, he needs to hook into another force in order to have power. No, Hashem is one. Hashem is one in the sense that he's self-sufficient. So because Hashem is self-sufficient, he alone, he has the unity and mastery. He He has everything that he needs in himself and does not need anything else at all. Everything else, however, whether it be an angel, a star, or everything associated with them above and below, depends on him for its very existence.
The thing about unity, quite different. Am I more than one? Or, am I unity also? Or, I don't know what you mean by unity.
No, we're not unity. We're really not unity. In what sense aren't we? In many ways. The truth is that the idea of unity is really the second principle of faith. That there's one, that this God that we're speaking about is Echad. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hashem is one. That is something that is really the second principle. But what we mean to say is that Hashem is not dependent on anything else. Meaning, it's all, so to say, everything is allegorical because we can't really conceive of Hashem. But he totally satisfies his own needs. He's not dependent on anything else. We are totally not like that. We're made up of so many different types of things. Our physical body, we have a soul. We have different parts to who we are. We have different character traits. We're totally dependent on our environment. We're not independent. We're not unity in any way.
So unity in the sense of independence.
In the sense of independence. In the sense of self, that's what he says. Only God is totally self-sufficient. He's self-providing. And therefore unity and mastery belong to him alone. Meaning, really the Rambam is going to speak about unity in the second principle of faith. But the first principle of faith explains that you could already see the weaving in of unity of Hashem from the fact that Hashem is self-sufficient. That the Rambam's theme you can see here is to develop the point that Hashem is not dependent on others. Everything else is dependent on Hashem. Well, if Hashem is not dependent on others, that also means that he's one. That he's totally one. It's not, there's no like elements that Hashem, like Hashem is dependent on another force, on another entity, on another aspect. No. Hashem's existence is one existence. It's totally like, it's like matter, that compresses very, very densely, so to say. You're using that imagery. The Torah teaches us this first principle and the first of the Ten Commandments, Shavuos, when it states, I am the Lord your God, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which really what the Rambam is taking up from that pasuk, from that verse, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, is that I am Hashem, i.e., I am the only existence that is self-sufficient. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the one power, the one force, the one being that is totally self-sufficient, and I, myself, none other, are your God. There's no other force. It's not like, Hashem needed nature to take us out of Mitzrayim. There was some coordination of other powers and so on. No, it's I, the very essential I, that is your God. No other power, i.e., I am totally independent. And that's demonstrated in this first principle of faith. Okay, so where are we going from here? So, a lot of what I do in the principles of faith, and I'd like to share with you in the time that we have, is I draw on this book. Maybe I introduced it in the class before, I don't know. This book is called Evan Shesia, and it's written by a rabbi that I know in Israel. I actually studied in his yeshiva for 1 year. His name is Rabbi Yochanan Bechafer, and he was a very close student with Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg. Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg was the Rosh Yeshiva near Israel Yeshiva in Baltimore. Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg was very well known for his commitment to analyzing and expounding upon the 13 principles of the Rambam. That's one of the areas that was a personal hobby, if you will, of Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg. And Rabbi Bechafer, who I know personally, who wrote this book, was a very close student with Rabbi Weinberg, and he also taught me some of the things about the 13 principles of faith. Before this book was written, about 4 years ago, I attended classes by Rabbi Bechhofer in a small setting where he taught us and shared with us the concepts that he got from Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg. I'm just telling you that because I feel some kind of an attachment, if you will, to the content here. It's well developed. It's beautifully written in Hebrew. He's actually looking for, right now he's looking to translate it and into English. It's a beautiful work. And much of what I have to say tonight, if not 90% of it, is from his work over here in Shasiyah. So it's not necessarily original. Okay? Okay. So let's understand a little bit about, let's go into the way he's thinking over here, the way Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg also developed things, in the following way. You know, there are, let's talk about the realm of possibility. Okay, let's talk about possibility. There are things that are absolutely impossible. There are things that are absolutely impossible. Let's give an example. If A equals B, it is impossible that A is greater than B. If A equals B, they're the exact same, that the, let's say, 4 plus 4 equals 8, then it's never possible that 4 plus 4 will be greater or lesser than 8. That's impossible. If 4 plus 4 equals 8, it's impossible that it'll be greater than 8. So that's something that's absolutely impossible. There are things that are possible. For example, let's say I tell you that three people in this room were born on the same day. Right? All born on the same day. Could be even born on the same hour. Possibly in the same minute, right? Who are you? Expose yourself. but let's say there are three people. Now, is that possible? Is it rare to find such a coincidence or a possible? You know, is that possible? It's possible. It's definitely possible. It's not. It's pretty random that would happen. You know, that would be really interesting if that we discovered that three of us were the exact same age. That would be very interesting.
How about two people?
Two people. Yes.
Born my date.
Yeah, okay. But not the same year. Same day, aunt and uncle, brother, same day, same year. Okay. It's possible, but right? You'll find people, obviously, you can look up people in history born on the same day, same year. It'd be interesting if you knew who those three people were, that they were born on the same day, same year. Is that possible? It's possible. It's possible that three women gave birth to a baby on the same day, the same hour. That's possible. Then there are things, like let's say historical events, you know, wild things happened in history. It's possible they happened, it's possible they didn't happen, you know, these things are, it's possible. Then there are things that must be, it has to be that way. For example, another mathematical proof, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. It has to be that if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. There's no way around it. Right? Mm-hmm. So we go from the impossible to the possible to the what would you call it?
Must be.
Wait, what's a better word for must be?
I can
call
it.
Inevitable, certain. Okay, the certain. Certain, inevitable. Okay, this certain. Something that's certain. Now, if we look at the world around us, everything that we came into an experience, we would not necessarily know of things that are in the world. Everything that's in the world, unless we experienced it. If we never, let's say we always lived on the moon, right? And then we came to Earth. And we experienced gravity, right? It's not something that we never would have known. If someone told you there's gravity somewhere else. Okay, I mean, does it have to be that there's gravity? Does it have to be that, let's say I tell you some wild thing that happens in a planet in some other galaxy and so on. Does it have to be that it's that way? It doesn't have to be. But if you experience it, that's something that's possible. Right? Everything in our life is relative. It meaning relative to an absolute. Must it be that way? Does it have to be? Does it have to be that the world would have gravity? Does it have to be? Does anything have to be? Nothing has to be in the world. Agree or disagree? Thumbs
agree.
Up, thumbs down?
Agree.
Agree? Okay. Anyone want to argue with Mr. Lindemann?
I dare you.
Everything in our world, our world.
Well, people have to die.
It didn't have to be that way.
Oh, I see.
Right? Other
you could have saved the man.
Could have.
Well, eventually.
Wow.
It didn't have to be that way.
It didn't have to be that way. It doesn't. I mean, there are rules by which the world operates, and therefore we take it as a given. But it doesn't have to be that way. It could have been otherwise. It's by design the way it is, but it doesn't have to be that way. Okay, so that's in the realm of possibility. Even something which is certain or inevitable, something that is, it has to be that A equals, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. Even that did not necessarily have to be a true rule. It's true, it's logical to us. It makes perfect sense and we can understand it quantitatively. You know, if 3 equals 2 plus 1, then it has to be that, you know, that 3 equals 1 plus 2, and because 2 plus 1 equals 1 plus 2, and they all equal 3. It has to be that they're all the same. But it could have been, it's possible, that in an alternative universe, it could have been differently. That's possible. So even the impossible, even the things that are certain, are really within the realm of possible. Even things that we take as certain are in the realm of possible. When we talk about Hashem's existence, we're saying that Hashem's existence is certain, as opposed to everything else which is in the realm of possibility. That's what we're saying. We're saying that it is not possible that there be existence without Hashem. That's what the Rambam means over here. The Rambam is saying that, okay, Hashem's existence is inconceivable. If He did not exist, everything else would cease to exist and nothing would remain. Meaning, it must be, it's beyond the theory of, you know, it's beyond relativity, if you will. It's beyond something that's relative in our experience, where even the impossible is really possible, is really in the realm of possibility. It's just that that's the way things are. But believing in Hashem, being understanding Hashem's existence, the first principle explains Rabbi Bechofer and Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg and others, they explain that what we mean to say is Hashem is the absolute existence. It's not relative. It's not relative. If He would cease to exist, nothing would exist. If we all cease to exist, if all the theories that are absolutely certain, everything we take as an absolute given, would cease to exist, the great given would not cease to exist. But if the great given would cease to exist, then everything else would cease to exist. It means, that's what the Rambam means. The Rambam means, if however we could imagine that nothing else existed, meaning not just that we wouldn't exist in the world that we know doesn't exist, but even if all the rules of certainty, everything that we take as an absolute truth, we take as an absolute fact, cease to exist, let's say there wasn't that absolute truth, still, that would not take away from Hashem's existence.
Yeah.
Okay? By the way, that's, you know, when we, just as a side point, when we spoke about, you know, proving Hashem's existence versus believing our tradition and so on, and believing Hashem's tradition that He gave us all the way, all through the generations, all of our proofs are really relative proofs. Everything that we will say is in the realm of, is relative. It's not absolute. We're not using concrete absolute terms. Because we're using our logic, we're using science, we're using our experience, which is important to use our experience, that's what we have. But it pales in comparison to, if you will, the absolute truth that we received from Hashem Himself. It's two different, it's good to use our experience and to, you know, to use our logic and theories and so on, so that we in the realm of possibility can try to perceive, you know, the infinite and the, you know, the absolute. But ultimately it's the message from the absolute that is much more profound than all the theories that we can come up with. Okay, this perhaps, I have over here, I'd like to read with you, the Rambam. The Rambam himself, Maimonides himself, codified, we all know the Mishnah Torah. This is the very beginning of the Mishnah Torah. The very beginning of the Mishnah Torah. And the Rambam begins in chapter 1, paragraph 1. It's the center paragraph. And please don't hate me if you don't like Hebrew. Okay, it's not me, it's the Hebrew. Okay, so chapter 1, paragraph 1, Aleph. Yeah? Says the Rambam in his opening to the Mishnah Torah, to his magnum opus, the Mishnah Torah. He says, does everyone see where I am over here? Mm-hmm. At the bottom?
Yeah.
Over here? Aleph. Yesod ha-yesodos. The foundation of foundations. Ve'amud ha-chachmos. And the pillar of wisdoms. Of all wisdom. Leda. It is to be aware and to know. She'yesh sham matzui rishon. That there is there, out there, so to say, there is a first, if you will, primal, a first existence. A cause, a first cause. Mehumantzi kol hanimtza. He was the one that originated all of existence, everything that exists. Vechol hanimtzaim min hashamayim va'aretz, anything that exists from heavens above to the earth below. Uma beinayim and everything in between. Lo nimtzu ela me'amitas himatzo. Only exist because of his true existence. So what is the Rambam saying in the beginning? The Rambam says, the foundation of foundations and the pillar of wisdoms is to know that Hashem is the first cause. The original cause. Right? What is the Rambam saying? Well, besides being cute, you'll notice that the four first words begin with the letters Yud, He, Vav, and then a He, which spells out God's name in a abbreviation. And that's not coincidental, of course. The Rambam did that on purpose, and many books actually follow the Rambam and do that. In order to say the Rambam is speaking about existence, and God's name, Yud, He, and then a Vav, He, say Hashem is the omnipresent. So he's speaking about Hashem, so he wanted to start that way. Okay? But furthermore, says the Rambam, what's the Rambam saying? This knowledge is the foundation of all foundations. Knowing that there's a God, number one, is the basis of all understanding in, over here is philosophy and religion. And secondly, Amud HaChokhmos, it's the pillar of wisdoms. What does that mean, the pillar of wisdoms? Explains Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg. What does it mean, the pillar of wisdoms? It means that all other wisdoms are really transient. They're really relative. The pillar, the tenet that really holds everything up, is the knowledge that there is something that is an absolute. You can judge things, you can hold things up against the absolute. If there is no absolute, then wisdom loses its gravity. It loses its proportions. It becomes this, you know, mishmash, you know, of philosophy. It doesn't have grounding. And Judaism, of course, has wisdom to it. And that wisdom is very much rooted in the principle that there's an absolute existence, or in other words, an absolute truth. An absolute being, an absolute truth, an absolute existence, and that's the pillar of all wisdoms. So that's what Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg explains. Yesod ha-yesodos, the first two words of the Rambam, is to say that the foundation of everything is that there's a God. But beyond that, it's also amud ha-chochmos. It's the pillar of wisdoms. Because wisdoms cannot develop, cannot flourish, unless there is an absolute. Otherwise, it's theories. But you have to start with an absolute. So the Rambam, in fact, is codifying this in his legal code to explain that all wisdom is really stemming from this one absolute. Comments, questions, rebuttals?
No, it's exciting.
Okay, great. That's great. I like those comments.
No, because then it brings us back to what we started with last week. Or maybe, I don't remember.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
That affirming God's existence is not necessarily, it's there. Because nothing exists without the existence of Hashem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what we were saying last week?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. And the proofs are relative.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, if the sun didn't come up, we'd know God existed and he didn't want it to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Because he made it to come up to begin with. Or he created it to
mm-hmm.
begin with.
Now, if you look at the Ani Mamin, you look and you open your siddur, your art scroll siddur, after Shacharit. So they have a abridged version of the Rambam's 13 principles of faith. We all know them. Not by heart necessarily, but we know them. And the first principle of faith says the following. Ani Mamin b'emunah shleima. I believe with perfect faith. She'abore yisbarach, that the Creator, may his name be blessed. Hu bore, he's the Creator, and creates umanhig, and he directs and guides l'chol habruim, all of creation. Hashem creates and guides all of creation. V'hu levado, and he himself, ha-yahove v'iyah, he himself was, is, and always will be. Period. That's the first Ani Mamin. It missed the boat. The first Ani Mamin, abridged version, misses the boat. It's off mark. I'm not saying this on my own. Okay. It was an abridged version. The authorship is you know, I think it's in question. I'm not saying it's not a good source. It's good to say the Ani Mamins. But according to this, what we're saying right now, the first Ani Mamin, the first statement, confession, if you will, I believe, with a perfect faith, misses the boat on really what the first principle is. Because the first principle is about that Hashem is an absolute. Not just that Hashem is a creator and he guides. Let's say God is not an absolute. He could still be the creator who guides the world and always was and always will be. But the always was and always will be, maybe he's playing on the absolute point. But it doesn't bring it home. You have to say Hashem is what we call in Hebrew Muchrach HaMetzius. Hashem is absolutely, must be, it's certain. And that's the first principle of faith. By the way, that makes a big difference in how we perceive Hashem. Because everything that we look to in the world, we look around the world, we think of the world as a relative world. This can change, that can change, all these things can change. But we think about Hashem sometimes in a way that, you know, Hashem is changing. Hashem possibly, God forbid, is changing. Hashem, like, we extend our understanding of the world onto Hashem. That there's this change, Hashem will change his mind, Hashem will shift, Hashem will that. No, there's none, that's not Hashem. Hashem is, this connects to the second principle, Hashem is one wholesome existence, being, if you will. We can discuss that in the second principle. And it's unwavering and unchanging in the way that's absolute. So Hashem is different than everything we know and exist in experience. This answers a big question. There's a big question. What's the question? The question is the following. The Rambam counts believing in God as the first mitzvah. That's well known. That there are those that count it as a mitzvah. Right? The Baal Halachos Gedolos, Rabbi Moshe of Kutzi. Is that a town in France? Kutzi?
Kutzi doesn't mean we build.
Huh? Okay. So it's I don't know the equivalent, but he was a prominent scholar and also represented the Jewish people in the government in France at the time of the Tosafos, which goes back about, let's say, I don't know, 800 years, you know. Rabbi Moshe of Kusi, the Baal Halachos Gedolos, he writes the following thing. He says that it's impossible to say that believing in God is a mitzvah. Famous argument. It's impossible to say that believing in God is a mitzvah. He denies the Rambam's principle that believing in God is a mitzvah. Of course, he says you have to believe in God, but it can't be a mitzvah. What's a mitzvah? A mitzvah says, I tell you, you must do this. It's a commandment. You must do this. Right? That's a mitzvah. You must do it. That means you have free will whether to do it or not. That means the possibility exists that you may not choose it. And, you know, so how can you tell someone, believe in God as a mitzvah. That means he has a wavering, he's wavering whether he should wants to believe in God or doesn't want to believe in God. That means when he chooses to believe in God, there's still an option that God doesn't exist. That means he doesn't really believe in God. Because he's choosing, is what the way the Ramban explains the Bahag, is that he has the options. You know, he's like options in front of him. And even when he chooses, he's If it's a mitzvah, that means the Torah is recognizing. That's the point. The Torah is recognizing that there's like two possibilities, you know. Like, for example, you could say Shema, and you don't have to say Shema. There's like, you know, there's the option in front of you. But when the Torah tells you, believe in God, that means the Torah is like, God forbid, considering the option that there isn't a God, right? And when you consider the option that there isn't a God, that means that even when a person chooses that there is a God, it's out of choice, and it doesn't mean that God really exists. That it's essential that God exists. So how can it be a mitzvah? So the Bahag argues on the Rambam.
Aren't you just considering the possibility that somebody might not believe in it? Not necessarily that there is a God, but that somebody might not believe in it.
That's possible. But when the Torah says believe, so what is the Torah telling us to do? That means that I, who have a wavering faith, I'm not sure, does God exist, does God not exist? So the Torah understands that. And it tells me as a mitzvah to believe in God. That means that when I grasp onto that faith, it's something that's a wavering faith. Let me just take a quick look into
because
the book.
A mitzvah gives you
options.
An option. Whereas just believing has no option.
One second, please. And the Bahab says that, of course, you have to believe in Hashem, but it's not a mitzvah. What's going to help? What's going to guide us? The belief that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and he did the miracles. So this is all like, Hashem doesn't have to tell us, believe in me. Like, experience will prove that. Yeah? And the other arguments are that, the famous argument, how can it be that Hashem commanding you to believe? Who's the commanding authority if the commanding authority says, believe in me, right? That's a famous question. I mean, what comes first? First, the commanding authority. First, you hear the voice. The voice says, believe that you're hearing a voice. I'm hearing the voice. Believe that I'm hearing the voice. Either you hear the voice, you don't hear the voice. You don't have to believe that you hear the voice. It's either believe there's a commanding authority or there isn't. But according to what we're saying right now, this question is answered. That what? That this question is answered. How do they answer the question? They say the following. That in order for something to be, that's true, the Rambam does not mean to say that believing in God is the mitzvah. That's not the mitzvah. What's the mitzvah that we're learning? The mitzvah is to believe that Hashem is the absolute existence. The fact that there's a God that we knew before. To get mitzvahs, to receive mitzvahs, it's not necessary for us to believe, this is an important point, it's not necessary for us to believe that Hashem is an absolute existence. Let's say God created the world. Let's say he's not an absolute existence. Let's say God's existence, beyond our comprehension, Hashem is relative, a relative existence, right? Let's say. But bottom line, he created the world, he guides the world, he told us what to do, we still have to do it. It's his world. What's the difference if he's a relative existence or an absolute existence? To accept the mitzvos, we still have to abide by the mitzvos because he's the creator who created the world and guides the world. Period. So for that, the Rambam agrees, that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to believe that Hashem is the absolute existence. That's the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha is not to believe in a God. It's to believe that Hashem is an absolute existence. And that answers the question. We know there's a commanding authority, but what's, if you will, the character, the quality, so to say, of this commanding authority? The aspects of this commanding authority. The aspects of this commanding authority is that he's an absolute existence. That's the mitzvah. And that's Anochi Hashem Elokecha that the Rambam says. That I am the only one who's the commanding. Anochi, I'm self-sufficient. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That's the mitzvah that is the aspect of the first principle of the faith. And that answers that famous question. Now, I had a famous question. Who cares? That's a famous question.
That is a famous question.
Who cares? Who cares that we know that we have to believe God is an absolute authority or God's not absolute authority? We just finished saying that with regard to mitzvos, it would make no difference if we knew God is an absolute authority or God was a relative authority. Bottom line, we have to observe Torah and mitzvot. Hashem gave us Torah and mitzvot. We have to do them. What's in there? I have to start thinking, no, I believe Hashem's not a relative authority. It's really an absolute authority. Well, what difference? Absolute existence. What difference does it make? I still, in this world, in my simple mind, I still have to observe Torah and mitzvot. Who cares that the tenet, the first principle of Jewish faith, is to know that God is an absolute? What difference does it make? I still have to keep the Torah and mitzvot. How does it change? How does it change what I do? That's I think, that we have to, I'd like to suggest that with every principle of faith that we study, we need to know who cares. We need to know what difference does it make to my living as a Jew? Living as a Jew! Meaning, the faith, these principles of faith, they're not something esoteric that you should know out there, something, there's this UFO flying in the air, has nothing to do with you, and just, you know, live your Torah mitzvah life. No, if I tell you something new about the principle of faith, that means it changes the way you live as a Jew. You're a different Jew because you believe this principle of faith. It has to change you. It should change you. It should be something that you're trying to integrate into it's just supposed to make a difference. It's not something esoteric that, you know, you continue doing Torah mitzvahs the way you're doing them before. You're a different person because you believe in this principle of faith. What changes? So what changes? And now that we believe in an absolute being.
Because the other is a falsehood. You're living a lie if you just do Torah and mitzvahs without believing in Hashem.
No, we're not talking about believing in Hashem.
We
believe in the existence of Hashem. That I can believe in the existence of Hashem, that the quality, if you will, the character of this existence of Hashem could be a relative existence. It could have been, hypothetically, that Hashem would not exist. But now that He does exist, He created the world, and He guides the world. So I still have to observe my Torah, I still have to keep my Torah and mitzvot. The fact that on a theoretical level that I can't even understand, that Hashem is an absolute existence, He's an absolute truth, and there's no other way that my belief is supposed to be, that there's no other possibility in the world, that it's impossible, it's inconceivable for Hashem not to exist. What difference does that make to me?
Then why do you do Torah and mitzvah?
Because Hashem created the world. Either way, Hashem created the world, He guides the world, He told me what to do. I have to listen to the authority.
No, why?
Because He's the God.
No, but you have free will.
I have free will the other way too.
No, you don't. Because if you inculcate Hashem in your life, there is no way that you have free will. You have free will only in the possibility.
Mrs. Lindemann, please listen to what I'm saying. Even if Hashem is a relative authority, that doesn't mean sometimes He wants you to do mitzvah, sometimes He doesn't. It doesn't mean that.
No.
Hashem is, He's still the same person, so to say, the same God that we knew before. He hasn't changed. I'm still talking about the same God that we always know. The only difference is it possible to conceive the possibility that Hashem does not that He doesn't exist, is it possible that there would have been a permutation in all of existence, all of experience of everything? Is it possible that in existence, I'm using the word existence in the broadest terms possible, is it possible that in reality, is it possible that there could not have been a God? Is that a possibility that's out there? Why do I have to believe that? And now that there is a God, let's say that would be a possibility. Now the outside in reality there, theoretically speaking, in reality, it's possible that God could not have existed. The bottom line, God does exist. For whatever reason, He does exist. He didn't have to be that He existed, but He does exist. He created the world. He guides the world. He gave us the Torah. He gave us the mitzvahs. We have to do it. He's got a plan. Let's follow it. And we have no choice, because if we don't do it, He'll doom us, and if we do it, He'll reward us. And, you know, it's His world, He's the master, we're His slaves, we have to do it. We have to do it anyways. What difference does it make that there's a possibility, there's no possibility that, there's no permutation of not having a God. Well, who cares?
Hashem was born 6,000 years ago. He was born.
No.
He created the world.
No, in our experience, whatever that would mean, not that God forbid there was a beginning to God. Not that Hashem was born on His own, because how would He have created Himself?
It's the same as the choice that Abraham made by following God. basically you just, you know, he rejected the fact that there were several gods, and then, you know,
got
the existence proven to him.
No, 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 you don't understand what I'm saying. You don't understand what I'm saying. I want to ask this.
Between you and I, we say, Otzi Shalom, we should even think of it. Because to think that even...
The what?
That the existence of God, not that... If we believe in the Ten Commandments, if we believe in Sinai, if we believe in Egypt, even before that, Avram, I mean, even before that, as we started becoming human, the existence of humanity, there's no being, there's no other way than this amazing...
You don't understand. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't understand what I'm saying. Let me clarify one more time, okay? There are two models. Let me explain. There are two models. Two models. In both of them, there is a God. I'm not saying there's a possibility that there's no God. I'm not... Nothing but God's existence. Hashem exists, always was, always will be, in both models. What's the difference between the two models that I'm presenting? In both of them, he's the creator and guides the world. The difference is the following. In one model, there's a theoretical possibility, it could have been, that God could not have existed. Now the reality is, though, he does exist. And he created the world and he guides it. That's one model. A second model is that there's no theoretical possibility that God could have not existed. There's no such model. There's not even a possibility. What difference does it make to us in the world where God does exist? What difference does it make to us if there's a theoretical possibility that God could not exist? Or there isn't a theoretical possibility that God doesn't exist? Bottom line, sof kol sof, bottom line, God exists. He created the world and gave the Torah, and now we have to keep it. What difference on a theoretical level? Who cares? What difference does it make to us? That's what I'm asking. I'm not asking if there isn't a God. There is a God in both models. Just the theoretical possibility of there not being a God.
What difference does it make? Yes. So in the first model that you presented, for example, the first model, so there is a God, as you said, but there is always this question mark of, is he absolute? Is he forever? Is he here as long as I'm here? Is he just going to all of a sudden pack up and leave and I'm going to have to look for some other Torah and mitzvah? You know what I mean? So my observance of Torah and mitzvah is totally linked with the fact that he's absolute, in the sense that that is the foundation that's holding me, that keeps me connected and gives me the motivation to do this for life. And to say Naseh Benishma, I'll do it even if I don't understand it. Why? Because he's absolute. Now, if he wasn't absolute, there was a question mark about, then I don't really know that I want to accept this blindly. I'd like to ask a lot more questions. You know what I mean? The absoluteness of the second model.
I like how you say pack up and leave.
No, yeah.
Who might pack up and leave? Where's he going to go? God knows.
If, for example, God is the master of this world.
Right, I understand.
If he's the master of the world, and he's the master of the world because right now we have proven that he exists, but, you know, the absoluteness of it, that's something we haven't quite figured out. And it could be that in a year or two, scientists will come up with another model that will say, well, we thought he existed, but not quite.
No, he always did exist, just you're saying that it could be that his existence will, maybe things will change on some level.
Well, yeah, I mean, he always existed. Okay, so we're talking about the past and in the present.
But the future,
we still don't know
sure.
How long and whether he's infinite, that is also questionable. And all of that is going to create a lot of worry and anxiety in human heart about, you know, why do I have to work so hard and follow this path if we don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow and there is no absolute certainty that, you know, so why? Let's live today, enjoy today, take the Roman model, take the Greek model. You just live and enjoy life.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, but my rebuttal to you, I understand.
Maybe your question is not
clear.
No,
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But as long, since Hashem created the world, even in the model where theoretically, like, it's possible what you're saying. I'm just, I appreciate your comment. You know, I appreciate your model. I appreciate what you're saying, but I'm saying, perhaps that what we're saying is that Hashem would always exist in this for our purposes in this world. Meaning, the system's always going to be, Hashem's not packing up and leaving from this
in
world.
In both models, there is...
Yeah, Hashem's going to be here tomorrow.
Right.
Okay? Just that, there would have been like a theoretical possibility that he doesn't exist, meaning it doesn't have to be that, you know, he would be the God or that there would be a God. But the reality is that he created the world. He is present. He created the world, and he gave the Torah, and we have to keep it, and he'll be here tomorrow.
So you were saying he will be here tomorrow as well. So what's the?
He will be here tomorrow, but there's a theoretical possibility. So to say, like let's say, out there's a theoretical possibility beyond his everlasting existence of always was, always will be. There's a possibility that it didn't have to be that way. It could be that there would not have been a God.
Oh, okay.
Then you take off the mastery then, if you do that, because he is the master also.
Mm, that's a very interesting point. You take off the mastery. That's yes. Connected to what
that's you're interesting.
Saying.
You're saying, so in other words, right now this is the case. However, it doesn't necessarily should have been this way. That's what
right.
You're saying?
I'm not saying that's the truth.
But
that's false.
No, of course. We're
don't walk away from this class thinking that.
I know.
I teach all the wrong things. Rabbi Jacob said that there's no God.
No.
I didn't say that. I'm not saying that.
I think that's model where there is a possibility that God does not exist. I think it's just inconsistent if you want to have same God as a model when there is no way he's not there. Is that not logical? Because if there is a possibility, if there is one or the other, so it means there is a cause that affected God to exist or not to exist.
Right, like can't be
understood, right? God is not absolute then, if there is some other cause. There is
right.
No other cause.
There's a greater power somewhere.
There isn't something else.
Right.
So it's just inconsistent
right.
With what we call God. It would be something else, not what we call God.
Okay. But let's say it's not what we call God, but it would be possible that this second tier power would be in charge of our world and would be, you know, creating and guiding our world. That would be sufficient for us, because we don't care who's his boss. I mean, you know...
We do care, because human mind is wandering. It's not something that cannot perceive some idea and do not go, you know, and try to develop this idea. Then he just won't be our one God.
Mm-hmm. Take one more comment, and then we're going to move on. Alisa, yeah.
Well, I'm not sure how it would affect us, but it introduces the possibility of there being something outside of God, even if it's not in our world. Even if God is in our realm exactly as we think of it, but there's a possibility that in some other realm he isn't, that introduces a concept that's very foreign to us, that God is not one. If there's a possibility of something else, that means that there's something else that's not God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I don't know how that would affect us, but we say Shema Tzvayisadeh, I mean, and that's what we're saying.
Right, oh, no, that's true. We don't believe that, of course.
It seems like it would have to affect us, but I just...
Okay. So then you just, because of the purpose of time, I have more to share. So I want to, if you don't mind, we move on, and then we can, if you want to stay, we can talk.
Okay.
I'm not, you know, I have all night. other people may not. Okay. So I just want to offer, I greatly appreciate the comments that are made. I want to just support them and, you know, just offer where we're going with this. The difference between mitzvos that are observed with the belief that there is a God, but it's a relative existence, versus the quality of a mitzvah that's observed when this is the absolute, is a totally different type of mitzvah. It means, like everyone's saying, that all of everything that we know, that everything of reality, I'll use the word of the reality other than reality being bigger than existence, you know, what is, you know, everything in reality, everything is funneled to this purpose. It's all, there's one master, like you said so nicely, that would take away his mastery, you know, so that, like, you're, like everyone's saying here, that there would be something other than God, or there would be, he would be subordinate, then the meaning of the mitzvah is so greatly diminished. The mitzvah is a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah that I have for my Creator. Okay, no, it's very important, I have to do it, it's a system and so on. But it's not the, if you will, the from the beyond. It's not bombastic. It's not from the reality. It's not like huge and infinite. The mitzvah is not infinite. The mitzvah is it's a mitzvah from the Creator of this world. So I do it. You know, there might be a creator of another world. You know, like there might be, you know, he's subordinate to another power. He's not, so he could be here today and yesterday, maybe gone tomorrow. But it's not. I might have to do it, but it doesn't have the effect, the imprint on the person who does it, like the person who believes and knows and inculcates that this is absolute truth. That's a different mitzvah. More than that, perhaps. If Hashem's existence is relative, then what we choose as a community to be what we want to abide by is not really any worse than what God provides us with. Let's say our moral and ethical standard is, you know, that we believe in lower morals, whatever they might be. We agree that it's fair to do whatever, to steal, or whatever we might agree to, lower morals. And God, who's not an absolute power, has a different standard. It's true, he's the Creator, and he gave us the Torah, and we're subject to his decrees and so on. But bottom line, there's no absolute truth. So what really, what's the value really, 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 except for the fact that he's holding a sword over our head, what's the value of the difference between his law and my law? I could also come up with some law that's relative. Today we'll decide that it's okay to steal. Tomorrow we'll decide it's not okay to steal. Then we'll decide another law. Democracy. Why not? Why is democracy any worse than the authority who created the world? Okay, it's true, he's got the upper hand. But it's all relative. There's no absolute truth. There's another point. Perhaps this was touching on what you were saying. You said that it leaves a question in the heart of humanity, or you said something like that. That if we do not believe that there's an absolute truth out there, and that's obviously God, if we don't believe that, then we essentially do not believe in the absolute truth and the goodness in ourselves. We will never ever recover a true streak in ourselves. And like someone was saying, that we will lose hope. I think you were saying that. We lose hope. Because there's nothing to strive for. It pulls the carpet from under us and we're hopeless. And you said so nicely, you said that there's so much anxiety. The human being, Hashem created the world to make the world good for us. The most fundamental goodness that we need is to feel that we are taken care of. That when I need to be dependent upon something that's worthwhile depending upon. Not something I can't depend on. Here today, gone tomorrow. You know, I'll go crazy. I can't rely on that.
Maybe.
You know? Huh?
Madoff,
okay.
Can't depend on it.
Some people thought that he was a god when he was a... Okay, but...
It would be like, you know, if somebody built the Empire State Building and said, you know, I'm telling you there's a foundation there. The other guy says, there's no way that could stand up without a foundation. There too, you know. So, in the first case, I probably wouldn't go in. You know, in the second case, if I really believe that, I go in.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the difference
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
If I know that it has to be there.
You know, we're coming to receiving the Torah. There's a famous midrash that says, well known, that says that Hashem went with the Torah around the world to all of the nations of the world. And he said to them, will you accept my Torah? And each nation said, no, not us. You know, they said, what's written in the Torah? And he came to one nation. I have the midrash over here. I'm not going to quote it verbatim, but he came to one nation, and they said, you know, you can't steal. They said, oh, can't steal? Oh, we can't. You know, we can't accept the Torah. One, the other one. You can't murder. Oh, can't murder? Oh, we can't accept the Torah. Now, have you ever seen a society where stealing and murder is rampant and it goes on for a long period of time and everyone wants it? No! We don't have societies like that. It's anarchy. It doesn't last for a long time. We don't do that. So why wouldn't the nations accept it? Says Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, this very point. That what the Gentiles, so to say, had difficulty with, what the Jewish people took upon themselves, the difference is the following. That as a community, the nations of the world, what this Midrash is teaching us, and it's based in the Psukim in the Torah, it says it in Bezos HaBracha. It's founded in the Torah. It's not just some allegorical story. We believe it is part of history. It's absolutely part of history. It's recorded in various different methods in the Talmud. That, in so many different ways, like in Bava, it's brought in Bava Kama with regard to Hashem. It's brought in halachic ways. It's a fact. It's a, if you will, it's a historical fact that Hashem offered the Torah to the other nations. And what was their objection? Even though they don't steal either, and they don't murder either. But they're not willing to give in to the absolute truth. Because on a democratic level, they're willing not to steal. But if we decide that the definition of stealing changes from year to year, or the definition of murder changes from year to year, as it does right now, then we're not willing to accept an absolute truth. We're not willing to accept this point. The Jewish people, when they got the Torah, Hashem opened the skies and opened the earth and opened all of reality to them, and they realized, Ein od milvado. There is no other existence. Absolute truth. The Jewish people were privy to that because they wanted to accept the Torah. When they wanted to accept the Torah, they said, Nasa v'nishma, so then Hashem gave them the opportunity to see that there's an absolute truth. But the Gentile nations who did not want to accept the Torah, they were objecting to the absolute truth. They didn't want to see that, so they weren't privy to the giving of the Torah to see that. But the Jewish people were privy to that. This is the very point. And that's exactly, it's amazing. That's exactly what Hashem told them at Mount Sinai. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am the absolute existence. That's what Hashem told them in Har Sinai. That's the significance of the first of the Ten Commandments. I want to share with you one more point. The third commandment. There's a third commandment of Lo Tisa Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. Do not bear the name of Hashem your God in vain. There's more that I want to say, but we're not going to have time. Rashi says, Rashi quotes the Talmud, that if you testify, if you swear, let's say you swear, for example, that this picture on the wall is really, I don't know, it's a table. Let's say you take an oath in court that the picture is a table. Well, of course, that's false. And if you bear God's name in vain, you say, I swear by God's name that this picture is a table. Well, if you do that, you violate a Torah commandment, and you will receive lashes in the Jewish court, and you'll be, you know, shunned by the community if you go ahead and do that repeatedly. Okay. What happens if I take an oath? I swear that this picture is a picture. I take a vow, an oath in court. I swear by God's name that this picture is a picture.
That's obvious.
Same thing.
You're also whipped for that. You also get Malkos. It's also a prohibition. Mm. Why? Because what are you saying? You're saying, I, by God's name, the absolute truth, I'm saying this picture, just like God, is an absolute truth. Therefore, believe me that this is a picture. You're implying, at least implying, if not more, that this is an absolute existence, just like Hashem. Because what's the truth? The truth is, there is no truth. There's no absolute truth other than Hashem. So if I swear about something that happened by Hashem's name, so I'm saying, believe, just like I say that Hashem is true, believe me that this thing is true. That's what I'm saying. Well, that is true. If it happened, it's true. But when I do a double statement about something that's obvious, I'm saying that this picture, it's not that it's just a picture, because I just said it's a picture. This picture is a picture, i.e., it's a real, existent, and absolute truth picture. Oh, you're saying that? Then you're lying. Because then you're bearing Hashem's name in vain, because there's only one absolute truth.
Well, before this picture became a picture, it was probably just a plain piece of paper or whatever. So it's not an absolute, right?
It's not an absolute.
It's changeable. And tomorrow, this is going to be gone.
Right. Even if I took a vow that, you know, that, you know, that, let's say, an oath that, well, I'm not going to get into oaths, but the point is that if you make a statement about anything that to us might be seemingly absolute, with regard to Hashem, it's relative. And therefore, it's a lie to say that. And therefore, you bear Hashem's name in vain when you do that. I want to leave you just with one comment, and you'll read this on your own.
How would you say it, Rabbi?
You don't say it.
you
say it's a picture, but you can't swear to God by it.
Oh, no, but they have you put your hand on a Bible, so...
You don't have to swear about the obvious, because if you do, what you're saying really is that it's an absolute truth, and there's no other absolute truth other than Hashem. There's an article on the back. I photocopied it. Hopefully I won't be jailed for copying copyright. I photocopied this from the Feldheim publication of the Hirsch, the new Hirsch on the Chumash. This is a beautiful little article. It's part of a whole article on the mitzvah of tzitzit. The Torah tells us to look at the tzitzit and remember the mitzvos. So Rabbi Hirsch has a beautiful essay over here. And I challenge you to make the logical connection between what we spoke about tonight and the mitzvah of tzitzit. Okay, and the way he develops it, I think that you'll find that very entertaining and intriguing. Okay, there's a very deep connection between absolute truth and the mitzvah of tzitzit. Okay, so you read this article, and that's your homework, I guess. Okay, you read this article and enjoy that. And next week we will have class on Thursday night. Next Thursday night.
At 8 o'clock.
Stay tuned. 8 o'clock.